Tonight we're gonna focus on a particular area, which I think is really fascinating in terms of just putting ourselves into the seat of Tanakh. And that is that whenever you are regular people in society don't usually like to think too much about politics. And the truth is, they only really think about politics when it affects their tax returns, it affects their immediate life. That's why there's such a large amount of people who don't vote in general. They don't really care most of the time, unless it really affects them, unless they get really hot under the collar. And even then, the voter turnout in America is extremely low, and in many democratic countries. And that is just from day to day, people don't necessarily have to choose sides. It doesn't really matter too much to people on a daily basis. However, there are times where people are forced to pick sides. So in certain situations, when war happens, as an example, then people are forced to pick sides. And those are very difficult sides to pick. Or we get when it gets very contentious, as an example. So I remember in the 2016 election cycle, do you remember that there were a number of people who felt absolutely sure that one side would prevail? And they already started publishing articles and already started talking about as if, because why? They felt so sure that therefore they could put all their money on that particular horse and they would be safe. In a more extreme case, in World War II, as an example, so whenever, as an example, in German occupied Italy, so when Germany was the occupying force, and Italy was actually at the point where Italy was following German command, then those who fraternized with Germans, once the Germans retreated, were killed by the partisans, right? Because you can't, there's no neutrality. Right, so anything is seen as choosing sides. Very, very, very difficult to live in such a time where one has to pick sides. And so, what we're going to see as we learn through this next section is people being forced to pick sides, and we see how some people straddle that fence, how some people put all their money on certain horses, so to speak, lahavdil, and we're going to see the difficulty of trust. So David HaMelech at this point in time is now under threat of rebellion. He hears about the rebellion of his own son. And now people who are going to be forced to make a choice, what they're going to do. And we're going to see different reactions. So we're going to learn about this evening some of those people, some of the reactions, and some of the mistakes that they will make as the pendulum swings back. So this is our starting point. What we're going to do is in the middle of Perek Tesvav. We're starting in Perek Tesvav, Pasuk Yud Gimel. This section is going to go from Yud Gimel to Yud Ches. It's now when David HaMelech hears the news that his son Avshalom has given the rallying cry to Hebron. All the troops are coming towards Avshalom. What does David do? How does he react? David receives the message and he says, Hayalev ish Yisrael achare Avshalom. He hears that the heart of the people are after Avshalom, which means we don't have numbers, but at this point it sounds like a large amount of people are following Avshalom. In Tesvav, Yud Gimel to Yudalad now. David asher itoy b'Yerushalayim. He says to all his servants in Jerusalem, Kumu v'nivrucha, let us get up and flee. Ki lo yisiyeh lanu pleita mipnei Avshalom. We're not going to be able to have any refuge from Avshalom. Maharu lo leches penyamaher v'siganu v'hidiach olenu esara'o v'hika ha'ir l'ficharev. Because if we were to stay and we were captured, the entire city would be killed. The entire city of Jerusalem would be slaughtered. Vayomru abdei ha-melech el ha-melech, kechol asher yuchar adoni ha-melech, hine avodecho. So his servants say to him, Sire, O king, whatever works for you, we will do. We will follow your orders. He leaves his concubines in his palace. And they stand a distance away from Jerusalem. So then he sort of stands there as the people go in front of him. And what includes in going in front of him is all his servants, the crazy and the placey. Anybody know what that refers to? And in Tanakh, that usually is a description of the Urim V'Tumim. So Urim V'Tumim are now going in front of him, so he's taking that. We're going to see in a second how he deals with that. And then people from Gat, who came with him, he had 600 people of his loyalists from Gat, who comes with, and this is his entourage as he leaves the city. So there's a few interesting points to notice over here, and that is that in good battle, battles, and in good rebellions, what does the incumbent usually do? They usually dig in, right? Fight to the death, right? Die a hero. So why over here? David HaMelech hears about this, and then suddenly, that's it. Goodbye, And out he goes. There's not even a shot fired at this point in time in this war. He hears Avshalom is gathering troops, and that's it. Tisan. So okay, so it's a complex rebellion. This is not a cousin even. This is his own son. So on the one hand, he may not want to fight, right? So he may not want to fight itself. Now the option as well is that we don't know, but it sounds like when it says Lev Yisrael el Avshalom, it says that the heart of the people to Avshalom might mean that there's a really large amount of people with them, right? We don't know exactly how many there are, but it sounds like there's he has quite a following. And I think to me, I think this is something we should not overlook. And that is the Malbim says that he makes a comment about something which shows the real metal of David HaMelech as a leader. Yeah, take a quick look. This is on the real sources that we have today. It's in source 55. The Malbim says in Pasuk Yudalad, he says, Shemaru laleches shelo yake Avshalom es ha'ir v'idiach alehem es ha'ra. He says, Rotze lomar, Sheim yasi geim kor v'Yerushalayim, ha'gam sheyochu livrach ya'arog es anshe ha'ir, What's going to happen? Let's say David HaMelech doesn't escape the city and there is an onslaught. Let's say they're captured. What will they do? They will massacre all of Jerusalem on the pretext that the men of Jerusalem were really attacking David as well. They were with David and actually as part of the attack. Were they? No. But in warfare, who's taking pictures? Right? Ki oz lo noda Adayin mi anshe David, mi anshe Avshalom, v'ilo yiradu mi hamachri v'sa'ir. And nobody's going to know who was really involved. V'gam im yodeh she anshe Avshalom horgu bom, yomru shezeyan hayu anshe David halochami mitoy karu avim lo'ir v'chosim etzel ha'ir havami v'sa'ir. And they'll say, no, they were helping the siege and they were involved. Why do you think that David HaMelech would have such a notion in his mind? Why would David HaMelech be terrified of such a thing? Because it already happened. Because when he sought refuge in Nov, in the city of the Kohanim, and they didn't do anything for him. All they did was they gave him bread and they gave him a Goliath sword. They were all wiped out. David HaMelech lives in a terrifying shadow. David HaMelech knows that in the end of the day, he knows that any place that when he is a refugee, that he takes cover in, he is ultimately threatening that place. Think about that for a second. That's a terrifying burden to carry with him, and he's not prepared to do that again. That's a very, very noble decision that David HaMelech is making. Could he win the battle? The answer is, maybe. Maybe he could. But is he willing to risk other people's lives for it? Innocent people? No. That's how David HaMelech draws the line. That is not a characteristic of many of the leaders we will see today. Most leaders today would fight to the death and use as many human shields as possible necessary to defend their dictatorship. Right, they're not to be found. Right, when America marches into Iraq, right, where is Saddam Hussein? Right, I'm saying like where are those brave leaders who are preaching their dictatorship on the radio? So David HaMelech does not act like that. The Radak adds in an extra thread to Asiya, which is actually more insidious. And this is not because of David HaMelech's concern for the civilians, but for another reason. Take a look at 56. He says, "Kumu v'nivrucha." He says, "Ki im lohi inihye ba'ir." Here we go. It's actually in the second section. He says the very, very last line is perhaps the best way to capture it. He says, Kolomar, Kevan Shehiskila Puranus Lavoi, Yoreani Shloi Nichle Mimenu. He says, I'm worried that the punishment has started. Once the punishment starts, it's not going to stop. What is he referring to? So he remembers that when Nasan and Lavi talked to him, Nasan promised him that there would be a terrible thing, an evil thing, which would arise from his own house. Now Avshalom has risen from his own house. Now David HaMelech says, it's begun. Once it's begun, there's no putting that genie back in the bottle. And therefore, I know that the writing's on the wall. I can't engage in this battle. That's what David HaMelech is doing. So it's more than the Malbim. It's not just simply a memory, a concern for the human casualties, civilian casualties. It's over here. He knows that this is a prophecy which is unfolding. And he is not going to put anybody else through that, which is just a darker background to this. It's like a bigger shadow that David HaMelech is carrying with him over here. Again, it's a noble decision because he is not fighting for his own name. He has thrown in his towel, and that's why he does not engage. Very, very, very sad point over here. Let's take a quick look at some of the folks we meet along the way. First person we meet along the way is a person called Itai Hagiti. These are mysterious people. We don't hear about them so much in Tanakh. We're going to hear a little bit about them in this complexity of dual loyalties. So here we go. The first person we meet is in Pasuk Yud Tes to Chof Beis. Let's try to understand who he is, what's he doing. So now the David HaMelech turns to Ittai HaGitti, whoever he is, and he says, "Lama teleich gamato itanu? Why are you going with us?" He says, "Shuv v'sheiv im HaMelech kinochri ata, gam gole ata limkomecha." He says, "You are a foreigner, so go to your place. Why come with me? Why come to my refuge? Go to where you come from." I'm going to be a refugee. I'm an exilee. You go back to your folks. You came, you go. Everything should be in peace. Ah, fantastic. And listen, very good. Very excellent echo. So let's listen to his reply. It's remarkable. So that's a language of an oath. He's taking an oath. Ki b'makom asher yihyeh sham Adoni HaMelech, im lamoves im lachaim ki sham yihyeh avodecha. Whether you go to life or death, I'm going with you. It's absolutely the same conversation. Isn't that remarkable? V'yomer David al HaMelech, leich v'avor, v'yavor Ittai HaGitti, v'kol anashov, v'kol atav, v'kol asher Ittai. And he brings all his family, and Ittai goes along with him. So this is a remarkable thing. So it sounds like, from just reading the psukim, it sounds like he is a foreigner of sorts. Right? He's a foreigner of sorts, and he is now, this is his pivotal moment where he is now saying, David HaMelech, I am with you, you are it. That's what seems to be going on. The Gemara actually gives a little bit of background to this. It's an enigmatic Gemara. The Gemara is talking about the lineage of David HaMelech's soldiers, and so Ittai is considered one of the soldiers of David. If he comes from Gat, if that's the assumption that we're making, then Gat was the place that David HaMelech lived in under the Plishtim years back when he was in refuge, so he had a very good following. This must have, may have been one of those people. The Gemara tells us in Kiddushin, this is an ayin, Vavamubayz, it's the 57th source. He says, Vahayika Ittai HaGitti. Surely there was Ittai HaGitti, the Gemara is asking about in terms of lineage. The Gemara says, Vachitem and Hachinami, Diyasi Bagat, Vahama Rav Nachman, Ittai HaGitti Ba Ubatla. So the Gemara says that there was a particular Avodah Zarah that Ittai HaGitti came and annulled. Now, just to understand the mechanics of this, this is the way it works. Is, if you have a item which is being served by Avodah Zarah, you can't use that item as a Jew. There's just no way of using that. So let's say you have, it gets complicated in certain, items in the church which are being used, or certainly in temples, in polytheistic temples. If you have any item which was used there in relationship to the service, Jews have no way of benefiting. You can't even get benefit. You can't even sell it. You can't feed it to your animals even if it's a food, right? Complicated. So yeah, is there ever a way to get rid of that we would call that Isser? So one of the ways is there's a notion called Bitzel, which means to say that somebody can say, this is no longer an Avodah Zarah. It's no longer a deity. But that doesn't help if I do it because I wasn't the one serving it, right? So it requires somebody who's already part of that fold to say, to basically besmirch it and nullify it. And now for everybody else, it becomes fine, because it was in their capacity to do that. So Gemara says that Ittai HaGitti was a person who nullified one of the pagan gods around David HaMelech, neutralizing it, allowing David HaMelech to use it. Which means to say, what does it tell us about his lineage? He must have been. He must be non-Jewish, because he had no right to nullify that. So we see an interesting thing about Ittai. Ittai seems to be a loyalist to David. He seems to be a person who's rejected his pagan upbringing of some sorts, and to such a degree that he's even speaking this language over here. And of course, David HaMelech is not going to say no to this. Why not? Because his great-great-grandmother said the same thing, and that's why he's here today. Right? So David HaMelech's great-great-grandmother is Rus. So when she had that conversation with Naomi, and Naomi said the same thing to her, go back to your people, and she says, Amech ami, velokai chelokai, ki amavis yafrid ben yevenech, that death is going to separate us, that's the only thing. So David HaMelech, this is a echo of David HaMelech's own past over here to be found in this person, a very unique person. This is, by the way, this is the gold standard over here. Ittai is really one of the, just a remarkable person in this respect. We're going to follow all the other people and see maybe do they match up to the gold standard or not. This is our first conversation. Okay, now we move on to our next individual, the next person we're going to be meeting. And so here we go. Before we get there, now David HaMelech is leaving. Let's focus on the Pesukim of Chav Gimel to Chav Vav. David HaMelech is leaving Yerushalayim between these two paragraphs. So they're leaving, they're going to the Kidron Valley. We all, you know, we've been to Yerushalayim. Next time we go there, ask where this is. You can see it right down there. So they're walking up the Kidron Valley out of the old city, and everybody's crying. Everybody's crying. Why are they crying? This is the king. The king's leaving. They're leaving the king. This is such a tragedy. He has a Jewish king leaving because of a Jewish oppressor. Right, it's such a terrible thing, you know. In 2005, at the Hitnat Kut, the disengagement, there were these bumper stickers: "Yehudi lo megaresh Yehudi." Right. Jews don't kick out Jews. It's a terrible tragedy because you know even the people who are being kicked out don't want to hurt the people kicking them out, and the people kicking them out don't want to hurt the people because it's, and this over here is even worse, right? So it's a terrible cognitive dissonance and pain that's happening over here. V'nei gam tzadok v'kol avi levim itoy anosim es aron bris elokim v'yatziku es aron elokim v'yale yasar atom kol am davor emina ir. So now tzadok, who's the kohen, comes and he comes with Eviatar, and they're about to take the aron out of the city. They're about to take the aron. There's no, at this point in time, there's no Mishkan, there's no Mikdash, right, that's been destroyed, but the aron is now in the city of Jerusalem as David HaMelech has secured it. Return the Aaron to the city. If I am in God's grace, then I will return to the city and I'll see it. He'll allow me to see it. And if Hashem says, nay, it will not be, or I do not wish to see you, I will do what's good in Hashem's eyes. Almost a fatalistic kind of response over here. So what do you see happening in David HaMelech's mind here? What's going on in his own, the mechanics in his own mind? It's interesting. Let's actually reverse in history to try to appreciate another episode of where this proposition was suggested. Let's go back to the time, in the times of Eli, when there was a Mishkan, and there was a war between the Philistines and the Israelites, and they're fighting, and they're feeling like they're not doing so well, so what do? They go and bring out the Aaron. The Aaron now becomes their tool of success in war. Does it work? The answer is no. It got taken into captivity. That's what, I mean, that's the whole thing. Shmuel and Navi had to bring it back on the whole business. So what did they view the Aaron as, essentially, then?
God's
as power, right? They're taking the scepter of power. They're going to use God's power to smite their enemies. Well, Hashem says it isn't about my power. It's about what you vest in it. And you've really been treating it in a very empty fashion. Your kind of religious service has been very deficient, so it has very little power now. There's no special, Raiders of the Lost Ark business kind of thing. It's like, and there's no special powers. It's only as much as you invest in it, and it's really not important. What's fascinating is over here is David HaMelech doing exactly the opposite. David HaMelech is essentially saying that is that if I don't have power, then the Aaron's not going to help me, and if I do have power, then it won't help me either. Meaning, David HaMelech is number one, is diverging from that approach. And by the way, it's so easy. We do this all the time, right? We love ritualistic items. We love being able to sort of say, this is, you know, something which is special, and we'll hang on to it, you know, and it becomes something which is powerful and a token and a talisman. And people love this. It's a human thing, right? And so, and we still do it today, sometimes correctly and sometimes very incorrectly. And so what David HaMelech is saying, you know, it should be interesting. If you read Shulchan Aruch says, you should not be writing the names of Malachim on your mezuzahs. Right? Like the Shulchan Aruch says, you should not be doing this. The mezuzah contains four parashiyos. There's two parashiyos of Kriya Shema, Tefillin have four. Two parashiyos of Kriya Shema is in the mezuzah. That means to say that that's our responsibility every time we look at the mezuzah. And that obviously guards us if we're living up to that. But we shouldn't be writing on these things, you know, like in the names of Malachim, which some people would do on the outside to protect us. Why? Because people like talismans. People like to have something that they can see, touch, feel. And David HaMelech is saying, that's not the kind of Judaism I adopt. And he's saying that's a very important thing. Also, what he's not doing is it may not be an aspect of power, but it also might be an aspect of really symbolism. Because who is Avshalom going to really be if he walks into Jerusalem and there ain't no Aaron there, right? That, you know, he could really sort of pull the carpet from out of the Avshalom and take the Aaron with him, and that would be it, right? Why does David HaMelech not do even that? It's not like it might be a power, but a symbol. Why doesn't David HaMelech even do that? What does his language sound like he's saying in his mind now? He's leaving it in Hashem's hands. This comes back to what the Radak said at the beginning. What was the Radak saying? Why was it that David HaMelech was not prepared to fight in the first place? It was because He saw the punishment was opening. What David HaMelech is saying is I can't fight that. I cannot fight the punishment because I caused it. So David HaMelech is saying, therefore, I'm going to leave it in the hands of God. I'm not going to force, so to speak, God's hand by taking an arrow. Now he's going to have to protect me. And no, if he wants to punish me, he's going to punish me, whether I have the arrow or not. I'll leave it here. I'm not going to do this. By the way, it is interesting. In halacha, it's not so simple. You can't just remove a Torah. You know, people feel like today, you know, like, I'll take it here, I'll take it there, I'll take it with me, I'm going on a Shabbaton. It's not so simple. There's halachas about this kind of thing. You know, you're only allowed to move a Torah, technically speaking, if in the place you're moving it is a Makom Kadosh, and you also, it's going to be read from three times at least. It's not, you know, like David HaMelech is saying, okay, they're not going to make the whole fanfare just on our behalf. And that's another aspect of David HaMelech's noble decision, at the same time also his fatalistic accepting of that nevuah, which was coming into full relief in his eyes. There's an interesting aspect over here, and that is you do see a little bit of a shift over here between two kohanim. There's Tzadok and there's Eviatar. Okay, just appear. We're not going to focus on that so much now, but there are two kohanim mentioned over here. Eviatar, if you remember, was the last of the kohanim from Nov. Right? He was the son, I believe, of Achimatz. He was the last of the Kohanim of Nov. The other Kohen is Tzadok. They're actually from two different lines of Kohuna. And it's fascinating that this line of Kohuna that Eviatar is from is called the line of Eli. The whole of Nov being wiped out was part of the curse of Eli that he would lose the Kohuna. So not that they deserved it, that they didn't deserve it themselves, but there was something happening to them. And Eviatar, in a certain sense, is disappearing right now, and Tzadok is rising. That's what we seem to be seeing over here, which is the end of that curse happening to Eli, that even his children are not going to serve under David, which is this. We're seeing this transition of Eviatar, you know, being the exit host, and Tzadok being the one that David HaMelech is talking to. Finally, let's just look at one last little conversation. We'll look at two more conversations to close this parak here, and then that's where we'll hold for today. In the first conversation is David and Tzadok himself. So David HaMelech now turns in Chav Zayin to David Aleph. Vayomer HaMelech el Tzadok HaKohen, Aroya Ata, Shuva Ha'ir B'Shalom. So now he turns to Tzadok and he says, you return to the city in peace. So he tells the Kohen as well, not just the Aaron, the Kohen himself, go back. V'achimatz bin Chav Yonatan ben Aviatar, Shnei b'nechem itchem. You all return, other Kohenim. Re'u anochim yismahamea, ba'ar voice amidbar, ad boy davor me'imochem la'gidli. So he says, I'm waiting for your son to tell me that I can return. I'm trusting you. So David HaMelech is now using the Kohanim in a certain sense as his messengers for his return. They return with Aaron to Jerusalem. He goes up to the Ma'ale HaZesim. Where do you think that refers to? Probably Har HaZesim. So we know where that is, right? Kidron, the Menachal Kidron is just as you go down to the bottom of the right, is to Har HaZesim. He's going to the top of the Har HaZesim. He's overlooking the area where the base of Midrash is, from the very top of the mountain. And he's crying. And his head is covered. He's walking barefoot. They're all crying, and they're all ascending. He hears that Achitophel is among those who are rebelling, and he says, Hashem, please eliminate his advice. A few things to notice over here. These actions of David HaMelech, barefoot, head covered, those are all actions of? Velos. Right, so these are all actions that describe a person in mourning. David HaMelech is also mourning the position, not just his personal loss. Yeah. Right, so there seems to be the bigger experience that David HaMelech is going through as he goes through it. Another thing to think about over here is the following: is at this crucial moment, actually, Chazal tell us that as he's on Har HaZesim, that is when David HaMelech says Tehillim Mizmor Gimel. How does that go? So this is actually on the page we have. It's on 64 on page 15, the other side. Mizmor David Bevarcho Mipnei Avshalom Benoi. He says this is his mizmor to David when he's running from Avshalom his son. Hashem morabu tzorai rabim komim olai. Hashem, my foes are so many are coming to attack me. So that you can experience this is one of these magical moments where you hear the emotions as we hear David HaMelech crying in Shmuel Beis. We don't hear the words he's saying. Now we have the words he's saying as he's actually running, and this is on Harazesim. So we put these two episodes together, the words and the emotions and the actions, we get a much more full picture of what David HaMelech is experiencing. You'll also notice that as he's crying and he's saying this, he talks about Rabim Kamim Olai, many people. So what we can see in the Rabim over here is not just Avshalom and his people, but also, we just heard about Achitophel. Achitophel, who was Achitophel? Let's take one last the paragraph and then just contrast him to this next person whose name is Hushai HaErki. He's the last person we're going to learn about this evening. Again, one of these more enigmatic figures in Tanakh. Here's what we are told. We're going to finish the parak, and that is Tezvav Lamebeis 2. Lamed Zayin, Vayihi David Bo Ad HaRosh Asher Yishtachaveh Shom LeElokim. He's going to the area where they would bow down to Hashem. Vihineh Likrasoi Hushai HaErki Korua Kutantoi VaAdamoi HaRoshai. He meets Hushai HaErki. This is his name. And he has a torn shirt, and he's got ash or earth on his head. Again, that's actions of a mourning, right? So he's clearly, at least visibly, in the same camp as David in terms of this experience being a bad one. He says, you come with me, you'll be a burden to me, Hushai. He says, look, I've got a better position for you. Here's the proposition. You stay as my trusted advisor in the city. You tell Avshalom that you've turned coats, that now you're going to be on his side, and now you can maybe be Mayfair. You can now upturn the advice of Achitophel. And now I've appointed the Kohanim, my sleepers. Give them any messages, because they are going to tell those messages to me. They have their two sons. Anything you hear, you send to me. So Hushai, the friend of David, enters into the city, and Avshalom comes from the other side. So you see, like already here, there's a straining of loyalties in a certain sense, because now the Kohanim, on the one hand, are supposed to be the priestly class, right? They're supposed to be above the fray. But David HaMelech has already pulled them onto his side, right? David HaMelech is now invested in them. They're his sleeper cell. They're going to be the ones to be his information gatherers. Then he has now also put another agent in place, and that is Hushai. One thing which is interesting when trying to understand who Hushai is, and apropos Achitophel, is David HaMelech says, you're a burden to come with me. Why would he say that? Why would he say that to somebody? It's a burden if you come with me, but if you stay, it'll be more helpful for me. So what's going through his mind, maybe? Maybe he has to protect him. Good. So what the Mefarshim say is it might be that Hushai is elderly. Mm-hmm. And so David HaMelech is saying, I'm running in the desert. I'm fleeing from, well to well. You're going to slow us down to protect you, whereas if you stay behind, you'll be more respected and you can now be my agent. That's what David HaMelech might be saying over here. Just from the language that David HaMelech is saying, is the journey we're going on is not going to be an easy one. David HaMelech doesn't even give a destination, right? He just says we're going to go into the desert. At this point, he doesn't know where he's going yet. Take a quick look at the Abarbanel. This is the last thing we're going to do this evening. And this is the contrast between these two figures, Achitophel and Hushai, and how the two work together. The very top of page 15. He says, V'inei Hushai, this is the Abarbanel, lo hivtzir la lochimoi, ki ra atzas David nechona. He didn't want to force the matter to go with him, because he saw that David was right. Because he went back where Avshalom was. He was called the friend of David. Isn't that interesting? He says, "V'chein korakos of Rei Hamelech, the friend of the king." V'Avshalom gam kein amaloi lomo halachta esrayecha. Even Avshalom is going to ask him, "Why don't you go with your friend?" So clearly, Hushai is a very, very close yadid to David. The Mefarshim suggest, "Shaya Rei Hamelech vo'ayavoy v'ish atzotzoi v'liyosa tamid imoy nikra Rei." He was so close to David. He was one of David's closest advisors. Vaniachshov, says the Malbim, listen to this fascinating historical point, it must have been that Re'eh is probably referring to a rank. Like we say today, a person is an aluf. Let's say, an aluf is perhaps a general, right? He is probably, Re'eh refers to his rank in David HaMelech's army. Ki b'loshon la'az kunri, ko'am kundi. V'nikra kain lefi shav litin, ko'am kumti, hu Re'eh. So he's just saying how that translates into the Hebrew language as another, so we'll call it, you know, some sort of major in the army. They're called his friends because they're in a cabinet, they're in an advisory council. Okay, now he says further. The Midrash Tehillim, the Midrash tells us, there was no person that David HaMelech trusted more than Achitophel. That's so sad, right? That's so sad. Achitophel wasn't just anybody. Achitophel was the person David went through for any word of advice. He was a military strategist. We see in David Ayamim that he's the advisor of the king. And therefore, the person that David feared and trembled the most from when he heard about the rebellion was not Avshalom, was Achitophel. That's what he says. He says, when David HaMelech prays not to listen to the Rasha, to the evildoer, he's not referring to Avshalom, it's referring to Achitophel. And therefore he says, skipping the lines, let's see over here, the very, very last line, by the comma, he says, Kevin Shirah David is Chushaya Arki Omar Yesh Aruka Lamakosi. When he sees Chushai coming out, he says, I have some level of healing. Why? Because Chushai was also one of the inner circle of the king. So now he realized that although he lost his most trusted advisor, who's now going to be his worst enemy, at the same time, he now has an inner circle person who actually is loyal to him, who will be able to go back and perhaps overturn that advice. And that is exactly what happens, because Hushai and Achitophel are going to be the two advisors to Avshalom in dissonance. There's going to be they're not going to give the same voice, and that's going to actually save David HaMelech's life. In this regard. So here we go, and this is Perek Tezvav is about David HaMelech dealing with the loyalists. When we move to Perek Tezayin, we're going to deal with those who enjoyed seeing David HaMelech's derision. And that's going to be even more painful, but it'll also lay the seeds for further groundwork. Thank you so much for taking the time.